This is Ozarks at Large for January 21st, 2014. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ozarks at Large is sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice. Walton Arts Center presents the Brazilian dance company, Companhia Cafig, Thursday, January 23rd, as part of the 10x10 Art Series. The all-male dance group performs a mix of athletic samba, hip-hop, and capoeira dance styles. Tickets and more information are available at waltonartscenter.org or 443-5600.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, trying to make sense of the year that was 2013, politics in Arkansas, and trying to guess how the election year of 2014 may unfold. Plus, Antoinette will walk us through the process used by a 3D printer.
We'll also take a ride along some innovative local trails with the founder of Progressive Trail Design.
First, a plan for construction of a 50-mile-long, 345-kilovolt transmission line along the Arkansas-Missouri border is still intact after a ruling by an Arkansas Public Service Commission administrative law judge. Residents, environmental groups, and municipalities have opposed the plan. The planned route runs from Benton County across southern Missouri and through eastern Carroll County. After hearing the case last August, Judge Connie Griffin says the $132 million project proposed by Southwestern Electric Pool Company at the behest of the Southern Power Pool is necessary to ease electrical congestion in northwest Arkansas and eastward. Pat Costner, the director of the group Save the Ozarks, says the organization remains opposed to the plan.
I think our biggest concerns are the impact of this much visual and environmental destruction on the tourism-based economy here, and the overall environmental impact on this fragile karst terrain.
Judge Griffin says the transmission line will provide opportunity for economic development and that environmental disruptions have been addressed in the project planning. Costner says the group will continue to challenge the decision. Save the Ozarks has spent nearly $150,000 in legal expenses, and the proposal has drawn the largest number of public complaints in the history of the Arkansas Public Service Commission. Construction on the project is scheduled to begin in March 2015.
Now that the Arkansas Department of Human Services says monthly costs of funding the state's private option are in line with projections, Governor Mike Beebe says the findings vindicate the reasons for passing the legislation last spring. Speaking to reporters late last week, Governor Beebe said the program has drawn the attention of other states looking to do similar things.
The other states, including those governors who are so vocally and adamantly opposed to Obamacare, are asking what we did and wanting to do what we did. That's as good a vote of confidence for Arkansas's unique approach as just about anything.
Despite some lawmakers continuing to campaign against the Medicaid expansion, the governor said he believes the program will continue to save money for the state.
There's a difference between Obamacare and a private option, and that difference has occasioned a super majority of the legislature to be for the private option. Take 75%. And so you've got a majority of the Republicans and a majority of the Democrats that, even though they may not like Obamacare, they like what we've done, or they like what they've done in the way of the private option.
Nearly 250,000 Arkansans are estimated to be eligible for the private option, which allows low-income people to purchase private health insurance using federal Medicaid money. At last report, about 77,000 had completed signing up.
The State Attorney General's office is cautioning Arkansas residents this tax season to watch out for rapid tax loans or rapid refunds. Sarah Tucker, the Senior Assistant Attorney General, says residents need to understand those services.
The problem is it's a loan secured by your refund. So if your refund is not at the amount that you thought it was going to be, you're going to be paying some exorbitant interest. And that's, you're actually borrowing your own money. And we want to let people know that you don't have to do that in order to get your tax refund fast.
Tucker says consumers should be aware of some other bad deals in getting refunds from some services.
Rapid refunds might sound very attractive, but if you obtain a rapid refund, whether it's through a refund anticipation check or perhaps your tax preparer is going to give you a debit card, you're actually going to be paying a lot of fees that you wouldn't otherwise pay.
Tucker warns about high interest through Rapid Refunds and encourages residents to visit GotYourBackArkansas.org for any questions about returns and for information about filing your income tax return for free.
Large home market sales in Arkansas were up overall for 2013. According to thecitywire.com, the number of homes sold in the state's four largest metro areas totaled more than 20,600 during the year. It's the first time since 2007 the total number of homes sold topped 20,000, and the first time the value of homes sold in the four markets passed the $3 million mark. The total number of homes sold in Northwest Arkansas, Central Arkansas, Jonesboro, and Fort Smith metro areas was up nearly 13% compared to 2012 and was up 15.5% when compared to 2011. Meanwhile, the total value of homes sold in those metro areas rose more than 15% compared to 2012, and values were more than 28% higher than in 2011.
Springdale-based Tyson Foods yesterday announced its acquisition of Warren, Michigan-based Bosco's Pizza Company. Bosco's Pizza is a producer of stuffed breadsticks and frozen pizzas for food service and retail customers, primarily throughout the Midwest, but the company also has products in some nationwide retailers. Details of the acquisition were not disclosed. Bosco's was founded in 1988 as a carry-out pizzeria and employs about 150 people. According to Tyson, neither the Bosco's pizza workforce nor the company's customer contacts are expected to change.
According to a new study, veterans view the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville favorably. According to Victory Media, a publishing firm owned by and geared toward veterans, the university is among the top 10 military-friendly schools most viewed by veterans and their spouses seeking an education over the course of the past 4 months. Additionally, U.S. News and World Report ranked the U of A as the 27th on that publication's 2013 list of best colleges for veterans.
A 24-hour burn ban has been issued in Benton County because of relatively high winds. County officials will reassess conditions tomorrow and determine whether to continue the ban. According to the National Weather Service, northerly winds between 15 and 20 miles per hour are expected today throughout northwest Arkansas and northeast Oklahoma. Wind gusts could be as high as 30 miles per hour. According to the Arkansas Forestry Commission, there is a moderate risk of wildfire across the entire state, and 11 counties, including Franklin, Johnson, and Boone counties, are already under burn bans.
Mostly clear tonight with lows from 19 in northwest Arkansas to 22 in the Arkansas River Valley. Expect sunny skies tomorrow with highs from 39 in northwest Arkansas to 47 in the Arkansas River Valley. Mostly clear tomorrow night with lows from 12 in northwest Arkansas to 19 in the Arkansas River Valley.
This is Ozarks at Large. Arkansas politics took some unexpected twists last year, making 2013 a more fascinating year than was originally expected. Arkansas Attorney General Dustin McDaniel began the year as the expected Democratic gubernatorial nominee, but was out of the race before it really began. Former Lieutenant Governor Bill Halter then announced he would run for governor, then he bowed out of the race. Former Congressman Mike Ross left politics in 2013, only to be the expected Democratic gubernatorial nominee by the end of the year. The state treasurer, an influential state senator, and the lieutenant governor all either left their offices or prepared to do so because of ethics-related scandal. Now comes 2014, with a narrowly passed private option for Medicare, supported by a bipartisan group of legislators last year, in danger of being defunded by the legislature this winter. This week, Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas talked about the politics of 2013 and 2014 with Rex Nelson. Nelson served in Mike Huckabee's administration, is a former editor at the Arkansas Gazette, a current columnist for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and he's also the president of the Association for Arkansas Independent Colleges and Universities. He told Roby he figured out in the span of a half hour last year that Arkansas's 2013 political year was unusual.
You know, the one afternoon it really hit me a few weeks ago is my phone rang, and it was the national political correspondent Karen Tumulty from the Washington Post. And then 30 minutes later it rang, and it was Jonathan Martin, the national political correspondent from the New York Times, wanting to talk about Arkansas. And I'm like, it's like the old days. It's like 1992, the presidential race. There's a real focus on us. We don't have anybody running for president because it's not a presidential year, but we've got the most watched Senate race in the country, and of course a governor's race. place that'll be watched.
And you were down at the Coon Supper, and mm-hmm. you saw there was a ton of national correspondents
down there. That's a great example. ABC was there. MSNBC was there. One of the national political correspondents for the Associated Press was there. You know, you always have Arkansas media down at the Coon Supper, but never seen that much national media in Gillette, Arkansas, I can assure you.
I'm sure they were accommodating with Wi-Fi and satellite trucks.
You know,
yeah, exactly. Let's talk about some things happening a little bit more locally here. Just this past week, GOP wins a major victory and a landslide victory. Mm-hmm. Special election up in Northeast Arkansas to replace Senator Bookout. John Cooper beat Steve Rockwell, the Democrat. It appeared to me that the Dar resignation impeachment drama had played no role in that race at all.
None whatsoever. It was a landslide. Now, I am always careful in taking any one special election and saying this is how this is going to transfer over in November when everybody's on the ballot. But I do think it is another example, Roby, of what you and I have talked about on past shows, and that is how the total political landscape has just flipped in Arkansas since the 2010 election cycle. We saw what happened in November of 10. We saw what happened in November of 12. And this certainly shows that we live in now a true two-party state, which may be on the way becoming a red one-party state in the next few election cycles if things continue along the current trend.
You get a little pushback on that commentary there. I'll tell you the other thing that was interesting to me in that Cooper win, too, as well, was looking at some internal poll numbers that were released. Impact Management Group released some polling they did and just showed that Senator Bookout was toxic in that race up there, 3-1 negative to positive in terms of favorability rating. I have to think that played out some in that race.
Oh, I agree. I agree. It did completely. I think there's a feeling in Senator Bookout of, disappointment's the word I'll think of, and sadness, and yes, maybe some anger there too. And with the person who happened to have a D after his name, as did Senator Bookout, that could not have helped the Rockwell campaign at all.
This is a theory that I'd like to test out this year, and we'll see. We've seen Martha Shoffner has obviously stepped down after the bribery charges been brought forward to her by Piegate. We've got Mark Dar and the expense reimbursement there. There's an opportunity for the Republicans running for the treasurer's office, the Democrat running for the lieutenant governor's office, to say they are going to clean up those offices. Do you think that the other party that has held those offices has got a negative working against them like we saw with Bookout in that special election?
I think possibly that's the case. I still think the bigger looming factor is still the big Obama factor that we've talked about in the past. But I think you may see some of that. But I'm not sure how many voters necessarily go in and pay that much attention, frankly, to a lieutenant governor's race or a treasurer's race. And remember, this person was of one party, so I'm automatically going to vote for the other party.
So you think Obama may be a factor in the treasurer's race?
I think the Obama factor goes down all the way down the line. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was the factor that put a Republican in the land commissioner's office and a Republican in that lieutenant governor's office and a Republican in the Secretary of State's office back in 2010. Yeah.
Let's stay on some campaign finance numbers here. We saw some big number posted by Mark Pryor in the Senate race. We've seen Mike Ross, Asa Hutchinson both announce their fundraising totals. Technically, federal candidates don't have to report till the end of this month.
That's correct. We're seeing
some early stuff there. But what do you see from the numbers that have been floated out there already? Competitive races in the fall, or do you think you see a fundraising advantage for someone?
Oh, I still think we see competitive races in the fall in the Senate race and the governor's race. We again know what we've already known, those of us who follow Arkansas politics, and that is that Mike Ross is one of the most tenacious fundraisers that has ever lived in Arkansas politics. I talked to one man who finally gave Ross a contribution after he said there were 7 message slips on his desk in a 36-hour period.
I have heard similar stories before, too, yeah. So anyhow, I finished train of thought there. I interrupted you.
So I think all the candidates are going to have the money they need to get their message out. I mean, there's not going to be a lack of money for Tom Cotton, certainly. It's not going to be a lack of money for Mark Pryor in the Senate race. But the same token, over in the governor's race, we're assuming that Asa Hutchinson is going to be the nominee. It's not going to be a lack of money for Asa Hutchinson or a lack of money for Mike Ross. Money's not going to be the critical factor.
BB presents his final budget as governor, as an elected official, the final budget he's going to preside over in a fiscal session, a little bit more than $5 billion. He's coming to your Political Animals Club. I want you to tout that event. But tell me what you think Mike Beebe's legacy is going to be in Arkansas politics.
Well, I'm glad you used the word budget, because I think Michael Beebe's legacy is going to be he was a very good manager. He was a very good fiscal manager at a time when a lot of states were struggling across the country. He was the governor during the Great Recession, the worst recession since the Great Depression, and he brought Arkansas through it very well. I think he has two legacies, and they're both good ones. I think is a good budget manager is one. I think also the ability to compromise, the ability to get along at the time we've seen this political upheaval. We didn't get into a real partisan stalemate between the governor and the legislature as much as we could have. There were obviously differences, but as much as we could have been in a Washington situation where we could have just gotten nothing done with Republicans controlling the House and Senate for the first time in 138 years and a Democrat in the governor's mansion. Fortunately for all Arkansans, Roby, that didn't happen.
We got about 30 seconds left here, and so the private option with that election in Jonesboro really not helping the private option's chances of getting renewed funding, does it have serious problems?
Got problems, yeah. It makes, for those of us that cover it and watch it, it makes a budget session interesting all of a sudden. You know, the last budget session actually wasn't very interesting. We came in, we were gone a few weeks later. This one could be really, really interesting.
Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas talked to Rex Nelson about the upcoming political year this weekend. Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large is provided by AT&T, encouraging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information can be found at itcanwait.com.
And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com. And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas, diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. Coal, oil, natural gas, hydropower, and renewables. More at AECC.com. And Mitchell Williams Law, providing diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Mitchell Williams Law Firm employs nearly 80 attorneys at offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com.
In about 12 minutes on Ozarks, not every trail in northwest Arkansas is alike. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich recently spent time on a pathway created by Progressive Trail Design.
So on this trail, you'll find like a variety of different features, technical trail features, like log rides and, you know, stone causeways that you can ride up on and kind of test your skills, learn balancing skills and technical skills, and really just get a feel for, you know, what mountain biking is all about.
A trail with wooden bridges, jumps, berms, even a teeter-totter in Bentonville. That's ahead on Ozarks at Large.
I'm Robin Young. Next time on Here and Now.
And I am telling you.
And she hasn't gone away. 30 years after wowing the world with this song, Jennifer Holliday has a new album. Next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
NPR's Here and Now this afternoon from 1 to 3 on KUAF.
Printers have long been a staple in an office setting. Depending on its special features, these machines can scan, fax, print double-sided copies, and may need the occasional swift kick to start working again. Today, a different type of printer, one that does more than just create two-dimensional images on paper, is becoming more mainstream. A 3D printer, as the name indicates, can create three-dimensional objects. Last month, the University of Arkansas Computer Store made a MakerBot Replicator 2 desktop 3D printer available for in-store use and purchase. Computer Store manager Jonathan Tannehill explains the 3D printer is not much different from a regular two-dimensional printer in that it creates an object by printing it one layer at a time, and each layer is as thick as a sheet of paper. The material this particular machine uses is a filament that's a bioplastic derived from corn.
So think of it as a mix between a printer and a hot glue gun. This gets really hot, 230 degrees Celsius. And it melts the plastic into a thin filament, and then it just starts laying it down in super thin layers.
MakerBot was founded in 2009, and its new printer that's available at the U of A computer store is the company's fourth generation machine. According to MakerBot's website, 3D printing is also called additive manufacturing, and it differs from traditional manufacturing, such as machining, which involves subtracting a material in order to achieve a certain shape. 3D printers have a history of being very large and expensive. However, MakerBot sells printers that are made, priced, and sized for the desktop. While this machine does cost about $2,200, Tannehill says that is much cheaper than what these types of printers used to cost.
In the past, they've always been extremely expensive. And $2,000, while it seems expensive, is a lot less than it's been in the past. A few years ago, you would have paid $12,000 for something like this. So it's come down very quickly.
The machine has a square black metal frame. It's an open design, so you can see the approximately 11-inch by 6-inch flat surface where items are printed in the middle of the machine. A spool of red filament is attached to the back of this printer. It's then connected to a device that hangs from the top of the machine, and it's heated up. The device then slides back and forth, much like a two-dimensional printer, and pours out the filament, creating each layer. Computer store manager Jonathan Tannehill says it costs $48 for a kilogram of material, which can print several models. One of the reasons it can print so many things is because oftentimes the items are mostly hollow. Tannehill says they wanted to have some fun when they first got the machine, so one of the first things they printed was a Doctor Who chess set. Some students have seen the machine in action and have even asked if they could print some things.
I already banned weapons and body parts, so yeah, we have to be careful with what people print here.
Tannehill says he realizes $2,200 might be a bit much for the average college student, so he's working out a system where students can be charged per item they print. The printer can create just about any item you can imagine. Tannehill and his staff have created a number of things that sit beside the printer, including a miniature replica of Willis Tower, a TARDIS, a working nut and bolt, and even some chain links that were printed interlocked. Sales associate Andrew Landiger says to print designs, you can simply download free software. The printer is hooked up to a computer, and it will read the design file you want printed. The 3D printer can even create multiple items at once, just as long as it fits on the 11-inch by 6-inch base.
The one we actually use is MakerWare, and you can download images from the internet. Like a big one we use is actually Thingiverse. I believe they're actually a subset of MakerBot. So you can pretty much find anything you want, like phone case, for instance. Find a phone case you like for your phone, like 4S, Windows phones, Samsungs. Pick one you like. Just download the image. Import it to the freeware. Change the size if you want. You can actually adjust the resolution, things like that. Standard resolution, and it's a faster print, so you're not going to get the best quality out of it. But when you switch it to higher resolution, it slows it down a little bit, but it's also a much better quality image.
Landiger says if you create your own design in vector-based drawing programs like AutoCAD, all you need to do is convert the file to a format that the printer reads, and it will print it. The architecture and engineering departments on the University of Arkansas campus both have 3D printers that are used by their students. However, 3D printers can also be found outside the realm of academia. For example, late last week, a company called 3D Systems released a statement announcing it has entered into a multi-year joint development agreement with the Hershey Company to explore and develop opportunities for using 3D printing technology in creating edible foods. This is the same company that, according to NPR, unveiled the first restaurant-grade certified 3D printer at the Consumer Electronics Show earlier this month. According to a news release from the company, the ChefJet series of 3D printers will include two printers that are expected to be available in the second half of this year. The monochrome countertop-sized printer will be priced in the sub-$5,000 range, while its full-color, larger-format counterpart will be in the sub-$10,000 range. 3D printers can also be used in the medical field. MakerBot is a subsidiary of Stratasys Limited, whose website hosts a video of a girl named Emma who has benefited from a 3D printer.
When she was born, her legs were up by her ears and her shoulders were internally rotated, and she had ulnar deviation on her hands and rocker bottom feet. The geneticist came upstairs and told us she had arthrogryposis multiplex congenita. They brought her legs down and they casted her, and slowly and surely, she started to develop.
The video continues on to explain that as Emma developed, she did not gain the ability to lift her arms using her own strength. However, researchers were able to 3D print a durable, custom exoskeleton with tiny, lightweight parts the child needed to be able to move her arms. The use of 3D printers is continuing to expand, but to see how a smaller desktop version of this machine works, local residents can visit manager Jonathan Tannehill and his staff at the University of Arkansas computer store for a demonstration.
I mean, it's just a really cool piece of equipment, and what we want to be able to do is, you know, bring students something like this that they wouldn't normally have access to. So that's, again, why we tossed around the ideas of Google Glass and 3D printing, because these are things that are usually outside the realm of, these are the things that are usually too expensive for students, so something they can see in person and actually see how it works.
The University of Arkansas computer store is located at 616 North Garland Avenue, just next to the Garland Avenue parking garage. For more information, you can visit computers.uofastore.com.
It is Tuesday, January 21st, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers, is with us.
This is really just a reminder about your story.
The story
about Anna.
Anna, yes.
Was she interesting?
Oh, she was great. We had a great conversation, actually.
She is speaking on the topic, The Power of One Voice, at 7 o'clock. That is Wednesday night, correct, or Thursday?
Thursday night.
Thursday night at Old Main's Giffels Auditorium.
It's free and open to the public.
Now, she is a young adult author, right?
Yes. I mean, she is not, I'm not going to say what's young and what's not.
Neither one of us gets to say that anymore, my friend.
But she writes books that are particularly
intended
aimed,
for.
Yes.
Apparently, A Step from Heaven was the big one.
Yes, that was her first novel. I read it last week, actually.
Oh, see, you're way ahead of me. It's the story of a young girl who moves with her parents from Korea to Southern California.
Which the character has in common with Anna, but that's where the similarities, the stories diverge.
It sounds really interesting, and there's nothing more interesting. You know, so many people, even my age, are choosing the young adult genre these days. So it's an interesting opportunity to go and hear an author you may not know about. And apparently the bookstore will wisely have books for sale so you can get them signed.
She has two other novels as well that she's written since.
There you go. 7 o'clock on Thursday at Giffels Auditorium, and it's
free.
Thank you.
Thank you. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is Ozarks at Large. There has been a dramatic increase in trails throughout Northwest Arkansas the past few years. A new sector of professional trail building firms has emerged to help meet demand. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich recently bundled up on a January afternoon in Bentonville and met the founder and foreman of Progressive Trail Design.
My name is Nathan Woodruff, also known as Woody, with Progressive Trail Design. And we're here with my good friend and main project manager, Chris Crone. And we're about to ride the All-American Trail and then segue into the greater Slaughter Pen Trail System.
Very good. And in 30-degree winds.
Correct. That feels like 20.
All right. Well, let's go.
Chris Crone takes off and disappears. Woody and I pedal onto the All-American Trail, a concrete path at Compton Gardens on Slaughter Pen Hollow Watershed. Just above us is a 2-foot-wide dirt jump bike path, which Progressive Trail Designs installed several years ago. Just one segment of a 15-mile-long network of biking, running, and hiking trails here.
So on this trail, you'll find like a variety of different features, technical trail features, like log rides and stone causeways that you can ride up on and kind of test your skills, learn balancing skills and technical skills, and really just get a feel for, you know, what mountain biking is all about.
The narrow dirt technical course for beginners has tons of fun features, banked wooden bridges, jumps, dirt berm turns, even a bicycle teeter-totter. We stop and dismount at the entrance to the trail to talk shop. Nathan Woodruff says when installing any trail, he and his 7-person crew first study topographical maps.
And then it's a matter of getting out in the field and scouting and finding what we call positive control points. And that's just all the like really cool features that you want to go to. So it could be a really tall, mature tree. It could be a rock outcropping or something of that nature. And then it's kind of pretty much connecting the dots in a sustainable fashion.
Progressive Trail Design, PDT for short, is a member of the Professional Trail Builders Association, which employs sustainable guidelines. Woodruff's firm also aligns with USDA Forest Service best management practices and counts a total staff of 10.
And then another probably 5 to 8 that we hire seasonally, primarily on projects that are out of state, like Colorado and that. And in different places around the country that we build.
Nathan Woodruff's brother, director of operations, is headquartered in Boulder, Colorado, where he's developing his own clientele and team.
In fact, we just landed a really cool project, a master plan trail design for the city of Aspen. So we're super excited about that, help them to develop a master plan to make it a mountain bike destination, basically.
Trail construction companies typically price jobs per foot, plus the cost of special features. For example, the dry stack walled and paved entrance we're standing on, built by stonemason Chad Laddish.
The price varies hugely depending on terrain. So, I mean, it can range from, $3 a foot to, $10, $15 a foot, depending if you're importing stuff or if you're in really steep, gnarly terrain.
Gnarly. The Woodruff brothers are land surfers, after all, huge recreationists who grew up cycling the rugged Ozarks, and as adults, even more remote places like the arid mountains of Peru. They crave to share that adventure with everyone by creating these interesting trails for cyclists, walkers, and hikers of all levels. Company foreman Chris Krohn.
The hiking trails, generally, we would put stairs in there to gain elevation, and we would not put all the undulation that we put into the mountain bike trails as far as the berms and rollers, stones to jump over, so.
Mellow grades, Krohn says, and wider for comfort. The crew uses novel equipment to construct the trails, and they sometimes have to import dirt to build up the surfaces.
Trail dozer.
The trail dozer, our Sutter, is a new machine that actually does a really good job harvesting all the soils to build up instead of importing. So it just depends where the project is and what kind of soils we're playing with.
Progressive Trail Design also builds mountain bike and ATV motocross parks and horse trails. The firm has built or renovated 10 major trails in Arkansas, 7-mile-long Blowing Springs in Bella Vista, Iron Mountain Bike Trail onto Gray Lake, trails at Lake Washita, Mount Ida, Lake Leatherwood, and Eureka Springs, plus ongoing projects at Devil's Den State Park. Again, foreman Chris Krohn.
We've been redoing all the bridges there to match CCC style of code of using the oak material. We've also redone a lot of the stone risers throughout the trail system and rerouted a poorly designed trail.
Owner Nathan Woodruff says they've also been improving a long stretch of the Upper Buffalo River Trail at Red Star.
We've been contracted to go in there and reroute a bunch of the poorly aligned areas and then also add some new trail. And our hope is that this trail system will become an Emba epic someday and be a real, destination.
Cycling destinations are ranked by enthusiasts and widely shared via social networks, and PTD's trails appear to rank high.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We are. Yeah. There's so many different styles of trail that have developed over the years. I mean, specifically with mountain biking, I mean, there's like 10 different kinds of trails you could build.
Give a litany.
This, for instance, is considered a gateway trail for beginners specifically. And then there's downhill flow trails. And that once you get into downhill trails, or also known as gravity trails, you know, you get into a wide variety of, whether it's like a jump trail or if it's a technical downhill trail that require, you know, that has a lot of, you know, rocks and stuff built into it that you would do like on a downhill race course or something.
New research indicates that cycling recreationists, both on and off-road, are around 37 years old and professionals with leisure income to spend. More than 80 trail-building firms operate across the country, according to a map posted on Professional Trail Builders Association of America. Some are single landscape architects, others pure design firms. Progressive Trail Design, with two regional offices, appears to be among the largest and successful. Most recently, Progressive Trail Design built a pump track red dirt bike path in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and are working up in Duluth, Minnesota on a single track traverse trail on Mission Creek. A new ambitious urban project Progressive Trail Design has taken on is laying trail on Lake Atlanta Park in Rogers. City planners say the park's antiquated and underutilized, so are expanding facilities.
Basically, us getting out in the field and, you know, flagging it, you know, determining where the trails are going to go and presenting a plan and an estimate for construction. And we accomplished that, and we got, it was approved by the council for us to proceed with construction. Recently, we've actually already started a little bit construction, but recently there's been some concern from a small group of citizens in Rogers about the environmental impacts of trail. They have hired an environmental consultant to come in. So what we'll do is flag the trail. The environmental consultant comes in, reviews it, makes sure we're not, you know, going through any, you know, sacred places or, you know, inundated areas or places that we need to avoid certain species, what have you. And then we'll adjust the trail accordingly before we build it.
Sun's setting, and Chris Krohn, who's wearing shorts, is starting to tremble from cold, so we head back. But first, we grab audio of the guy showing off, riding a long, elevated, undulating, planked track called Nessie.
Okay.
For Ozarks Trails at Large, I'm Jacqueline Krolik.
To learn more, you can visit progressivetraildesign.com.
Support for KUAF comes from the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal, featuring entrepreneurs and SBA leaders in their latest edition, plus local business news in Northwest Arkansas. Subscriptions and more information available at 725-0394 or nwabusinessjournal.com. And Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
Last week, we had a preview of a workshop sponsored by the University of Arkansas Fort Smith for people thinking about running for public office. That workshop, originally scheduled for this weekend, has been canceled. Another workshop, this one for people who want to write, is still set for early next month in Eureka Springs. The Village Writing School will devote Saturday, February 1st, to a workshop on dialogue and setting. Among the topics covered, what to say, how to say it, the four elements of research, and how to research. The workshop will be led by Allison Taylor Brown, the director of the Village Writing School. She has an MFA in fiction from the University of Southern New Hampshire. The cost for the workshop is $45, and you can learn more about it at villagewritingschool.com.
The annual Interfaith Harmony Day is returning to St. Paul's Episcopal Church in downtown Fayetteville in February. This year's theme for the February 8th event is World of Compassion. The main objective, like in years past, is for people of many different faiths to learn about each other. Organizers say there will be food, music, and art to help celebrate a day established by the Baha'i faith to honor all of the world's religions. This year's Interfaith Harmony Day, set for February 8th, beginning at 1 p.m. You can learn more by calling 832-567-4721. Music and more will also be part of something called Talent Wars at the Holiday Inn's Northwest Arkansas Convention Center in Springdale, February 1st. The talent show is sponsored by the Northwest Arkansas Arts Foundation and includes a roster of more than 15 acts. Those attending will be able to cast their votes for the acts they like best. A panel of judges will complete the round of voting. Winners will receive trophies. Tickets for the public are $60. More information at nwaaf.org Proceeds benefit the Northwest Arkansas Arts Foundation.
Valentine's Day is 24 days away, and if you're looking for an unconventional way to celebrate, you can pick murder or a Sasquatch to help. The Arts Center of the Ozarks will make their production of Death Trap a central part of a Valentine's Day performance. The play is about a writer who goes to extraordinary lengths to be successful. The Valentine's Day performance includes a pre-show meal with prime rib and cheesecake on the 14th. Death Trap opens at Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale on February 7th and runs through the 15th. You can find out more at artcenteroftheozarks.com. If you'd like your Valentine delivered from a big, hairy mascot, you can enlist the aid of the Northwest Arkansas Naturals. Their mascot, Strike, will again this year deliver a limited number of Valentines around Northwest Arkansas. The package includes a rose, a box of chocolates, and a pair of tickets to a 2014 Naturals game. The cost is $50, and reservation deadline is February 8th. More information at nwanaturals.com.
And one other sports-related note for this Tuesday, the University of Arkansas Razorback gymnastics team ranked 10th in the nation in the latest Gym Info rankings released yesterday. Arkansas gymnast Catherine Grable, by the way, ranked number one in the overall gymnastic rankings in the country. Arkansas will travel to Tuscaloosa Friday to face the number 7 Alabama squad. Arkansas's next home meet is Friday, January 31st, against Auburn inside Barnhill Arena.
The young Quebec harpist Valerie Melot has a new album out of Harp Concertos. Hi, I'm Katie Henriksen, host of Of Note Monday through Friday from 11 to noon right here on KUAF. Join me Wednesday for Bordeaux's Concerto for Harp in C Major, performed by Valerie Melot. That's coming up 11 to noon Wednesday right here on KUAF.
This is Ozarks at Large. Last week, President Obama announced the selection of a North Carolina headquartered consortium of businesses and universities led by North Carolina State University to lead a Manufacturing Innovation Institute for Next Generation Power Electronics. The Next Generation Power Electronics Innovation Institute includes the state of North Carolina, 7 universities and national labs, and 18 companies. One of the organizations included in the consortium is a Fayetteville-based company called Arkansas Power Electronics International, or APEI. This is the first of 3 manufacturing institutes that will be created under the National Network for Manufacturing Innovation. According to a news release, President Obama created the $200 million project to support recent growth in domestic manufacturing, stimulate the technology sector, and ensure the continued economic and national security associated with having a strong, advanced manufacturing sector. This first institute is a $140 million initiative. The Department of Energy will award $70 million over 5 years, and that will be matched by at least $70 million in non-federal commitments by the winning team of businesses and universities, along with the state of North Carolina. Last Friday, I spoke with Lauren Kegley, a design engineer at Arkansas Power Electronics International, to learn more.
APEI is a very innovative high-tech company that works on wideband semiconductor device and electronic solutions. So what we do is we create essentially the kind of brick that's on your laptop charger. We create that in a high-temperature, high-performance version that can go into things like aerospace or hybrid electric vehicles or a number of different very high-performance applications. Ultimately, what we'll be doing with this initiative is helping to ramp up our manufacturing facility. So in addition to designing and creating these amazing electronic solutions, we also manufacture the power modules that go inside these solutions.
So how did you become involved with this new million-dollar manufacturing institute?
Well, this institute is from the National Network for Manufacturing Innovation, which is a recent initiative under President Obama that is a $200 million initiative to create 3 different manufacturing institutes in order to try to stimulate the advanced domestic manufacturing sector. So what we did is it was a proposal process, and so we submitted as part of the North Carolina state-led proposal. And we worked with them, created a proposal. They brought together 18 industry partners, two national labs, and I believe four academic partners other than themselves to create this initiative. And so we worked with them to create the proposal.
So what will your part be in all of this as you're working with, like you said, there's about 18 different groups involved in this from across the country. So what will your part be in all of this, you know, here in Fayetteville?
Right. So the entire institute is called the Next Generation Power Electronics Innovation Institute, and it's meant to create more manufacturing in the wide band gap field. And so the entire consortium ranges from device level to experimenting with different applications. What we'll be doing is we will be a packaging foundry. So we'll create the power modules and things like that. We can work both with all the people in the consortium as well as additional partners. But what this initiative will allow us to do is simply create more efficient manufacturing than we already have, allow us to, you know, grow our manufacturing division and ultimately be able to create more products.
What are the benefits of having these manufacturing institutes? Like you said, this is the first of three. So
the benefits of them will be that it's been proven that manufacturing is currently growing. In the past 5 months, it's added 80,000 jobs. So the idea is to stimulate the manufacturing sector, especially advanced manufacturing, so very technical manufacturing, and try to create a cutting edge that will make our economy competitive in the manufacturing field. So what we're doing is growing this manufacturing department here in Arkansas as well as in the entire United States to help us create more jobs as well as to help the economy.
That was Lauren Kegley, a design engineer at Arkansas Power Electronics International. We spoke by phone late last week. For more information, you can visit apei.net.
This morning, the organization Healthiest Employers announced its selection for the 100 Healthiest Workplaces in America. Tied for 22nd on that list, Mercy Health. Kyle Brunen is Health and Wellness Program Manager with Mercy. He's with me on the phone from his office in Rogers. Kyle, first, welcome to Ozarks at Large.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me.
All right. The number 22 ranking out of the 100 Healthiest Places in the U.S., received in part, I understand, from something called the Walk to Dublin?
That's correct.
What was the Walk to Dublin?
Well, the Walk to Dublin is kind of an initiative across all of Mercy. So, you know, all of our Mercy hospitals and our what we call our Mercy ministry all banded together to collectively walk to Dublin, Ireland, by measuring the number of steps taken, you know, with pedometers. And our foundress, Catherine McCauley, began the first House of Mercy there. So, you know, our coworkers have a sentimental attachment to this place, kind of where Mercy first began. So they really kind of identify with that particular location and thought it would be a great place to you know, kind of collectively walk to, you know, for all of our employees. So it was a great event last year, and we look forward to continuing it again this year.
How many steps or how many miles do you have to go to get to Dublin?
Gosh, I think it was the equivalent of 25 million steps, if I remember correctly. It's a lot of steps, but really our coworkers were so engaged with this program that we actually ended up walking to Dublin several times. So it was a really great event and was very popular with our people.
As a health and wellness program manager, you want to make sure the people who you work with are healthy. Does it help to have that sort of goal to, okay, we want to walk the distance to Dublin or get so many pounds lost, something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. It absolutely helps to have a goal and to actually have a finish line for that goal. So, you know, whether it's taking, 10,000 steps by the end of the day, or whether it's that they want to lose 10 or 15 pounds, or even if they want to, you know, lower their resting heart rate to 65 beats, you know, those are all great goals, but making sure that they have a finish line for that goal, a time where they want to complete it is equally as important, just to increase the accountability.
And it helps with the buy-in, I'm sure, if you can have this sort of tabulation ongoing.
That's correct.
Many of the others that are on this 100 Healthiest Workplaces in America list are hospitals. Does there seem to be, more of an idea about a healthy lifestyle if you work at a place that's kind of dedicated to health?
Well, we think that it certainly makes sense here at Mercy. And, you know, with the new healthcare reform that's kind of on the cusp of our nation here over the last year or so, and what we're kind of progressing towards here this year, you know, we feel that it's paramount that people, you know, pay attention to preventing these costly diseases. You know, as a healthcare organization here at Mercy, we certainly feel that it's necessary and almost, you know, our obligation to kind of walk the talk and lead the way in this type of preventative approach to our own health and help save our healthcare system, you know, potentially, you know, millions upon millions of dollars. So we certainly identify with that strategy and that approach, and we're certainly, you know, elated to be recognized on a list like this.
Well, it was Dublin this year. Someday in the future, will it be the moon?
Well, I wonder. We've got 38,000 employees. If we can engage all 38,000 employees across the Mercy Ministry to take 10,000 steps a day, gosh, I hope that, you know, maybe we could get a part of the way there at least. But I like your thought to, you know, shoot for the moon and maybe we can make it. So we certainly walked probably around the world several times last year. It was a great event for us.
Kyle Brunin is Health and Wellness Program Manager with Mercy. He's in his office in Rogers. Today, the organization was named one of the 100 healthiest places to work in the U.S. Kyle, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Ozarks at Large is supported by the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, dedicated to the celebration and documentation of this region's history and culture.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Poto.
Poto, Oklahoma.
Fun to say. Mm-hmm. Yesterday at noon, mm-hmm. we weren't here.
Well,
not our fault.
We were kind of here. Yes. I was kind of here.
That's true.
We had a show ready for you, but if you listened at noon over the air, you probably did not hear it. We had some trouble with our transmitter during the noon hour.
Something about nitrogen, I was told.
I don't understand.
I don't either.
But all I know is if you listen to our FM signal, it did not get over the FM signal. It did air at 7 o'clock last night. So for those of you who listen to us at noon, we're going to be replaying some of those stories throughout the week. So, for example, if you listened at 7 o'clock last night and you're listening now, you may be hearing API again.
Right. And you'll hear Anna, my conversation with Anna, who will be speaking Thursday night on the University of Arkansas campus. That will air tomorrow mm-hmm. on our noon edition, mm-hmm. and again tomorrow night at 7.
Mm-hmm.
So everything that was scheduled to be on will eventually be heard this week.
Yes, I want to make sure people still know what's going on, and our apologies for the technical glitch.
Right. This is KUAF, and Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
We're going to end this show with a new song from two musicians who played Northwest Arkansas recently. Eric Brace was in Northwest Arkansas for a pair of shows this fall, as well as inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. And Daryl Scott has wowed locals with his concerts at Good Folk and at the Fayetteville Roots Festival in 2012. The name of the CD is Hangtown Dance Hall. This song is called King Midas.
When I walked in, I could see that you knew me. I saw from that look in your eye. Buy me a drink and I'll tell you a story I couldn't make up if I tried. The mill was near done and the channel was dug. The wheel was ready to turn. The water was rushing in right where I wanted. But now here's the lesson to learn.